Whenever you feel afraid, just remember, courage is the root of change, and change is what we're chemically designed to do. So when you wake up tomorrow, make this pledge. No more holding yourself back. No more subscribing to others' opinions of what you can and cannot achieve. And no more allowing anyone to pigeonhole you into useless categories of sex, race, economic status, and religion. Do not allow your talents to lie dormant, ladies. Design your own future. When you go home today, ask yourself what you will change, and then get started.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you reviews of Book Talk's most recommended books and telling you whether or not they're worth the time to read as busy young girls in the workforce. I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. So today we are reading a book that has basically exploded all over Barnes & Noble. I don't think you can walk inside a Barnes & Noble without seeing 8 different shelves with this book displayed on it. And it's also gotten a lot of hype on the internet. It is Lessons in Chemistry. And so this book is about Elizabeth Zott, who is a chemist in the 1950s. And she is, you know, a force of nature. It's a love story. There's tragedy. Trigger warning. There are several situations of sexual assault. And one character is in sort of a semi-domestic violence. Well, not semi-domestic violence. Is in a domestic violence situation. But it's kind of about women and the things they faced in the 50s. And Elizabeth Zott, who eventually becomes the host of a famous cooking show. Because the world of chemistry is not very welcoming to her. So yeah, and lots of other stuff happens, but you'll have to read the book.
Yay, 2 reviews.
Okay, I think I want to go last because mine is really out of left field.
Okay, I guess I can go. So this is a 5-star review from Goodreads, and it says, imagine if all men took women seriously. When you come across that perfect read, at what point do you realize? For me, it was from the very first page of Lessons in Chemistry. Honestly, who does Bonnie Garmus think she is coming in here and writing a book that completely speaks to me? And on top of that, it's her debut. Well, just knock me over with a feather too while you're at it. Why don't you? And then she goes on to like describe the book, but I'll stop there.
That's very cute.
It took me a long time to find one that really encapsulated how I kind of felt. And I was looking for one very specific caveat to be featured in the review. So I found one that does the trick. It's from Teachin at Artie's on Storygraph. It's a 5-star review. Mm-hmm. This is a stellar book. I'm not even sure how it happened or why it's so good. I just know that I fell into the story and fell in love with the characters. My heart belongs mostly to 6:30, though. Every tear I cried was because of 6:30.
Yes.
Facts.
Yeah. 6:30 is a dog, just so everyone knows. This isn't like a reference to some special time.
It is the most ingenious and totally random point of view to have and to write it from a dog that's like uber smart.
Oh my gosh. He is so funny. I loved his like little perspective. So
absolutely. When I was looking for reviews, people either loved 6:30 or like hated him with a burning passion.
Why would you hate him?
Yeah,
who they thought it was like a pointless point of view,
but it's like, not.
That's the most clever, well-written plot device.
Yeah,
I loved it. I loved 6:30
because it's so unique.
Okay, well, I have a 1-star review, which is not how I feel at all, but it's very funny to me. Okay, so I gave it. This is Therese. Anyway. On Goodreads, I give it 1 star for the absolute cliche digs at the Catholic Church. Hating Catholics is nothing new. It's been going on for centuries. Otherwise, it was easy to read and an entertaining story that I actually liked. You know, tolerance and forgiveness and all that business. I'm sure you tolerate all kinds of stuff, except Catholics. And instead of understanding us, you'd rather hate and belittle us, like the bad guys did to women in the book. 2 wrongs don't make a right.
I didn't feel like it was very anti-Catholic.
It's pretty anti-religion.
Yeah.
There are characters who are religious, though. And I didn't... Okay, what I felt is, like, the main characters are atheists, but I didn't feel like it was the Catholic Church that was singled out. I felt like it was just the church.
It was religion in general, mm-hmm. and I don't want to spoil the ending, but, like, there was... I feel like I will agree at one point that, like... I mean, I don't want to say it was intolerable of religion, but clearly, like, the settled, like, point of this book was science over religion.
For sure.
Yeah.
But and
I think we can get into it more into the non-spoilers or in the spoiler section, because I have a lot of hot takes on this one. And I think Casey and I will agree.
Probably. But I just thought it was hilarious that she, like, gave it one star specifically because she felt like she was hating on Catholics in this book and was like, otherwise, it was an easy read and entertaining story that I actually liked. I was like, okay, queen.
Well, right, you said you didn't agree with that one. Where did you fall?
I gave this book 4 stars. I already know what I think y'all's rating, or I know what Catherine's is for sure. But I'll explain. I loved the book. I thought so much in this book worked so well. Like, the voice is just immaculate. Like, the sarcasm and, like, the characters are so good. The story is interesting. The reason it wasn't a 5-star for me was because in the middle, I felt like it slowed down a little bit. And there were parts where I was kind of struggling to get through it. If I felt like the middle hadn't, like, lost its momentum a little bit, it would have been 5 stars for me, but that just kind of knocked it down a little bit.
I could see that.
I feel like I need, like, I have my, like, reflex review. I immediately put on Goodreads and then I think about it some more and let it simmer, you know? Reflex review, 5 stars. I'd probably bump it to, like, 4, 4.5 the more I think about it. I feel like there were a lot of slow parts in, like, the middle third of the book that I wish would have accelerated a little. And I feel like the main character, while, like, lovable, I wish would have, like, warmed a little bit, you know? Like, I still loved her and I love the book. I just, like, reflection, there are a few things I'm like, yeah, like, maybe not all the way 5 stars, but definitely one of my favorite books I've read recently.
I can see that too.
I think Seth gives it 5 stars as well.
Yeah, he's throwing a fit.
So I give it 5 stars and I'm going to stick to my 5-star rating. It's one of my favorite books of last year. I read it last year and then said, we have to do it for the podcast. So I'm the reason why this is happening. Thank you very much. it just reminded me of Love Hypothesis, but done better, maybe. Like, I love Love Hypothesis for its, I don't want to say trashy romance, because it's not trashy, but, like, it's a romance novel. This one has more nuance and it still has that steminism, as Casey pointed out in that last podcast and coined that term. It has that.
With Caitlin.
Caitlin? It was Caitlin? Yeah. Sorry, Caitlin. Quoted that wrong. Attributed that wrong. but yeah, it has that degree of this feminist, big personality woman who's taking the world by storm in a male-dominated field, also dealing with a lot of things that women have to deal with every day, even today, as being a single mother. And I just thought, we don't get her perspective as much as, like, this really, I wouldn't say antisocial, but, like, you know, not like a traditionally normal social level person point of view, and her very strange journey. And I loved it.
Oh, yeah. I actually commented the other day to you guys. I was like, reading Lessons in Chemistry has been so interesting after reading Love Hypothesis, because you can kind of compare these, like, where the industry was in 1950. You know, they're both fiction, so it's not, like, you know, fact, but this idea of what women faced in 1950 versus what they face today and the similarities and differences, which was super interesting. And yeah, and I'm glad the world is getting better, even if it's not perfect.
I will also give Catherine some cred because she was posting about how much she loved this book and the author liked some of our posts on Instagram. So that's really cool. Hey, Bonnie Farmers, hope you're listening.
Yeah, you're a really good writer.
And this is her first book.
It really shocks me because like the actual voice, like the narration of the novel, the voice of the novel is so good. It's so witty and funny. It has the perfect tone. Like I felt like it managed to tell even like really dark parts of the story and just this like great like cadence. Like I loved it so much. So I'm really impressed that this is her first novel.
And it's not just like one perspective. It's multiple perspective changes, like third person omniscient. Yeah. And so I sometimes get really annoyed by switching perspectives, but this one flowed so nicely and followed the right characters throughout. It was just well outlined.
Yes. And you got like, you know, like Elizabeth was clearly the main character, but you got like the perfect amount of everyone else to sort of put together, you know, this holistic like idea of everything that happened and like how, because Elizabeth is so strange of a person, that you know you also get everyone else's understanding of her and like, you know, her rigidity even though we love her, and you know, just her complexity. It was especially with 630, who is trying to defend the family like a good boy.
Such a good boy.
Speaking of Elizabeth and kind of what a strange main character she is, not like strange but strange in a good way, on more plot or character driven? I think this time I definitely argue character driven. Like she's so unique that she like carries the whole book.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to say because she's also like a lot of things happen to her that are out of her control, which kind of like makes me think plot, but also I see what you're saying too,
right? Like she's kind of static. Like the book is about her kind of sticking to who she is, not like changing necessarily, but I think she's got to be like, her story is what's compelling in her, you know, just trying to get through life doing what she loves, right? I feel like Catherine can weigh in.
Yeah,
I agree. I think this one's hard to tell because there's plot points of what happens to the character, like outside of herself that she can't control and doesn't technically, she's not the one moving the story along. It's almost outside factors or the plot points. And there's major plot points in this book. So I probably argue more plot, but like heavily focused on one character's journey.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we kind of already answered this. I think this is Bonnie Garmus's first book, so none of us have read other books by her. But I totally would read another book by her.
I saw a review that was like, okay, I need a book when Mad is like in her 20s or 30s. I was like, yes.
Yes. Mad. Oh my gosh. The way I would snatch that off the shelf. I would love it.
But also, I don't want to read any thing in the same world where if 630 doesn't exist.
I know.
That would be so upsetting. He'd have to just be this old man dog. Like, you know, Mad's in college and he's like 20 years old and like
figured out how to expand lifespans.
Yeah.
He's a smart boy. He can figure it out.
Yeah. And he's got Elizabeth on his side. Elizabeth and Mad. Okay. Another question we've already touched on a little bit. But how was the pacing of the book?
All right, psychopath Catherine, take it away because we know you're into this one.
Literally insane.
Oh my God, y'all. It's not that crazy. Okay.
It's crazy.
No, I need some audience interaction with this one because here's the thing. When I'm on an airplane, putting in AirPods and listening to music, the airplane sounds really drowned out. So I tend to just read a book instead. So the pacing of this book, I read it on a flight from Detroit to Austin. Like, I started it in the airport and then finished it while waiting for baggage claim for my direct flight. So technically, probably like 4 to 5 hours it took me to read it all in one sitting, technically.
She's acting like we're attacking her, but she's so proud of this.
Okay. I don't know about proud, because it's not like an achievement per se, but like, I'm happy I could finish it in one sitting.
Yeah. Catherine loves to flex on us mere mortals out here.
But no, I need audience interaction. Is this weird to finish this so quickly, or like when you're reading on a plane, you just go off?
Your only friend in the world is going to be Fiona Murray, because also crazy.
Yeah, because my mom will down a novel. What's insane to me is that you can just read so long uninterrupted. Like on an airplane, I start to get agitated. Like I just can't keep reading that long. So you are crazy, but it probably took me 3 or 4 days. Yeah, I read the first half, I think, really fast. And then I hit kind of the middle part where I felt like it slowed down. And then after that, it took me a little bit longer to finish.
I did read this in 2 days, two sittings. So I also have a decent attention span, but I don't think it was 5 hours. It probably took me longer. And it was on a Sunday, like while I had football on and was just reading. So I probably read like the first third on like one day, a Saturday, and then the next two thirds on a Sunday. So, but yeah, I couldn't put it down. I loved it. I know a lot of like the bulk of the reviews I read talked about how slow the first half is. And while like there's not a ton happening, I still couldn't put it down. Like it just that well written to me that, yeah, this almost was a read in one go.
Well, because the first half's more of a love story. And so if you don't love romance, it's not going to be interesting to you.
Right. There are, it's not traditional in the sense that there's like rise, 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 climax, fall. It's kind of, there's kind of a couple of them. So in the middle, you get a little bit of a slump. Like it's kind of sad in the middle. And I think that's probably why people don't like it.
Right. I mean, that's, it's hard because it's definitely like necessary. Like I can see, you know, why it took some time to like ramp up to sort of like the next part of the book.
I saw a review that said this is being adapted into an Apple TV show. Catherine's pulling up Google. I can see. Would you watch it?
Look, if they do for this book what they did for Ted Lasso, I will be front and center.
Oh my gosh. So it's going to be a movie from what I'm seeing. Oh my God, they already have photos from this.
Really?
Yeah. It's Brie Larson as.
Oh, she's perfect.
Now I will definitely be watching it.
Yeah.
I was just thinking who would be good at that. Oh my gosh, that's such a great choice.
And it's coming out this year.
Oh my God.
Okay, Bonnie Garmus, slay. Like, you just published this book and now there's a movie with Brie Larson in it?
Yeah, get your bag. Oh my gosh.
I don't think I've seen the Calvin before, but he looks like what I thought, and he's from Top Gun Maverick.
Interesting.
Oh, and Brie Larson's executive producing it as well.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. How do they crank these things out? Like, this
I don't know.
They signed the series in January 2021.
Dang. I mean, that must have been, like, right after this book was even released.
Yeah. Oh, and Bonnie Garmus is also a co-executive producer, so she's on the set. And Jason Bateman is an executive producer, too, from Ozark.
I don't recognize, like, a lot of the names, but they're from shows like How to Get Away with Murder, The Flight Attendant, The Last Days of Tommy Gray, from The Big Bang Theory, Homeland. So, like, there's big name show people on this.
Also, how did y'all think of 630? Like, what type of dog did you think of him as?
A shaggy. I picture, this sounds so silly, like, because of Winn-Dixie kind of dog.
That's exactly what happened. Okay. It's like a golden doodle shaggy.
I see it. I'm looking at the picture now.
For some reason, I thought German Shepherd, but I might have just read that description totally.
Well, it's because he was, like, in training with German Shepherds, but he was, like, the misfit.
Yeah.
I thought of, like, Big Mop Dog. I don't even know what breed that is, but, you know, lots of hair that's shaggy.
Scraggly little guy.
Yeah.
Well, I would watch that series.
I think this has the potential to be so good and so funny. And Brie Larson is the perfect Elizabeth Zott. So
this also has the potential with Apple TV to, like, get legs and move beyond the book, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if people love it, they could do some big things with this. Okay, so clearly we will all watch the TV show. That question is answered. We're really excited now that we figured all that out.
Went down a rabbit hole. Apologies.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're all a little hyped, so let's go ahead and give our Busy Girls ratings because I'm sure they're also hyped.
I mean, if I'm not giving it a 5 after only taking like 4 to 5 hours to read it, then I'm crazy. So it's a 5.
Yeah. Slightly more than 4 to 5 hours, but read in 2 sittings, 5.
I'm going to stick with a 4. I think it's well worth it. I loved it. I just like had a lot going on and it did make it like a slower read for me. And so I still 110% think you should read it, but I think I'm going to give it like a 4 Busy Girl rating.
Are you guys ready to get to the spoiler alerts then?
Indeed.
Okay, you mentioned Barnes & Noble. It was their book of the year. You could see it everywhere. Their edition, you know, the cover's like neon pink and the pages are blue. Like, it's hard to miss.
I have that.
Yeah. Does it live up to the hype?
Indeed.
Yes, absolutely it does.
I agree. I expected way more love hypothesis, but I am not mad.
I was too, honestly. When I read the like blurb when I started it, I was like, oh, it's going to be like a cute little romance thing. And I was like, I am pleasantly surprised that it's not just cute romance.
Yeah, I went almost completely blind. I knew Catherine loved the book. And I knew it was about a female scientist, but I didn't really know anything other than that. Like, I did not read the cover. I just opened the book and I loved it. I don't think there's really anything that could disappoint. It's just so good.
Love hypothesis walked so lessons in chemistry could run.
But I liked both.
Yes, they're both like great little women in science romance kind of stories, just like way more different than I expected.
Yeah. Speaking of the main character, what did you think of Elizabeth at the beginning and did your views change? And I'd also add in, we talked about earlier this idea of religion, and Elizabeth is an atheist and she says that on air. And that gets her a lot of flack from the general public. And this is the 1950s where atheism was not like a generally accepted term. And it wasn't a generally accepted non-religious viewpoint. So what did y'all think of that? And what did y'all think of Elizabeth's growth or character?
I loved Elizabeth. I could tell I was going to like her from the very start because she's just so strong and independent. The frustrating thing about Elizabeth is that she's so rigid, that which is something you can admire but also hate about her, because she cannot even amend things or her perspective a little bit to help herself. Like, she cannot, you know, tell something that's even a half truth. Like, Elizabeth is Elizabeth 100% of the time. And so some of the times she did make me cringe. I was like, ma'am, can you please just like not say it? Like, don't he? But that's who she is. Like, that's what a complex character is like, she's not perfect and you don't totally agree with her. And so I loved it. I, you know, thought her atheism was funny almost because it was just so atypical and she was so brash about it. But if you're religious, it's definitely not written from that perspective.
No. Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting to talk about Elizabeth with one of my friends who has also read this and is also religious. And like, yeah, that point of view exists out there. It was just like, I feel like a lot of like her antisocial skills, her atheism, her like single motherness was exaggerated so much for this book. And I could see why that would rub people the wrong way. Like, all of her character traits are very exaggerated, which makes her so unique.
Okay, I'm going to get on my soapbox that I mentioned earlier.
All right.
So, I absolutely loved her being so outspoken and unabashedly atheist in a time that that wasn't okay. Because I guess as an agnostic who grew up Catholic and grew up in this like religion and grew up very, like, not in a religious family, but I went to church every Sunday. I haven't seen in literature a good representation of a realistic agnostic or atheist. And I feel like that representation is very slim for the amount of percentage of the population in the US there is. It's over 50% is agnostic or atheist. So I feel like we get a lot of perspectives from Christian angles just because we live in a Judeo-Christian society. And I get it. And I'm not dogging on that. But it was super refreshing to see a well-spoken, intellectual, atheist, agnostic, who I don't think she was completely ratting on people for having their belief system. I think she was just saying her perspective of said lack of belief or religious or lack of religion or following a specific religion. So I really appreciated that as someone who came from a religious background and is now finding my journey through, I guess, spirituality and agnosticism.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
here's my qualm I wanted to mention, but like didn't spoil. And this is not super on the topic of Elizabeth, but kind of jumps to the end a little bit in the religion topic. Like, and first of all, to the lady with the review about her hating on the Catholic Church, man, she was hating on the Protestants for like her parents claiming crazy things and burning people alive. That was like crazy tongue speaking, like Appalachia stuff. So, but my one qualm is that, like, despite this book talking about differences and tolerating people who like weren't the norm in the 50s, I was kind of sad that at the end the priest said he didn't believe in God either. Like, almost like there was a winner and a loser. And I thought his thinking through religion versus science was interesting, but it kind of bummed me out that he was just kind of like, oh yeah. Okay, well, I actually don't believe in God either. Like, I loved his discussions with Calvin, and I thought that was important because, like, there are a lot of people, especially that I am around, that like believe in both, like religion and science, and I would fall in that category also. So I loved that discussion because you never see that. So I was bummed that that character kind of like his development was like giving up on religion as a priest. So that was one of my qualms, is like, if you're gonna have this cool little discussion the whole time, don't end it with just like someone giving in.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't personally interpret that as like a winner and a loser situation.
That's a blunt way of putting it, but like science
I
over
mean,
religion was the outcome.
right. I actually found it really interesting to think about a priest who was struggling with his faith. I think that's a per another perspective that we don't see like a ton in our like cultural vernacular, but I think is probably really realistic because priests are regular people and faith
Oh, yeah.
is a lifelong journey. And so yeah, I didn't that part didn't bother me. I can see what you're saying. I will say I completely agree with Catherine. I feel like so much media in America is just built upon the assumption of Christianity, and so it was really refreshing to read something that was actually sort of built off the assumption of atheism. Like, I don't think that either form of art is right or wrong, but it's nice to just have something different. And yeah, and so I really, fully agree with what Catherine said.
I will say I forgot about the priest angle. I did forget about that like side character development between him and Mads, but I did like that they had that relationship and that's how she
Oh,
kind
I
of found
loved
out about
that
her father.
relationship. Of course, 1950s, as a mom now, I would have been like, You were where alone with a priest?
Yeah.
But, you know, that's just modern times speaking for us. Not all priests are bad people.
Yeah. That's exactly what I would have thought.
That's what I thought as well when I first read it. I was
we're ragging on the church. Yeah, I was like, am I walking with my child alone with a priest? Oh my God.
Well, Mad was also pretty young too. I was like, you're letting your child just go everywhere.
Yeah, she was like five. But also, it's like the 50s. Kids just kind of, you know, they rode their bike to the soda shop and got some candy and stuff, you know, like.
Yeah, it's a different world.
Crazy.
I remember what I was gonna say. It's a very small point, but I'll just throw it out there. My thing was, I feel like books either lean into religion or just avoid religion completely, and so I like that there's finally something that's saying like, no, like the characters in this book don't believe, or like the dominant perspective doesn't believe. That's all.
Yeah, I appreciate the diversity, especially like we're talking science. A lot of scientists don't balance religion and science, even though this is America and, you know, God we trust. But, but yes, it was a very like realistic point of view.
Yeah.
Right.
Speaking of, so 1950s, Elizabeth is very ahead of her time, not only in just like bluntly being who she is, but and also like being against the Institute of Marriage and typical gender norms, but also like being a woman in the chemistry field. How do we feel about her experiences?
I think really good writing can make you suspend your disbelief for a long time, which is like what I think this book did. Is when I was reading it, I believed every second of it. Now that I'm done reading it, I'm like, yes, this is a little unbelievable. But I just think you're so sucked in the moment, and the writing is so good that you don't really interpret it that way when you're reading it. So I'm like, yeah, it's a little unbelievable that Elizabeth is this like powerhouse, independent, like 21st century woman that like has literally like every modern belief that you can imagine, stuff that's modern and divisive now, like not, you know, not just in the 50s. But yeah, it just really didn't bother me when I was reading.
No,
like I said, like everything was kind of hyperbolized, every aspect of her, but it's a fiction book. Like,
yeah.
And you're like reading it because it's not real.
Some of the experiences that she experienced are stuff that women experience today.
Oh, yeah. They were just like heavily stereotyped and exaggerated, which is fine because I feel like some people need that like alarm bell to be like, hey, this happens. Like,
yeah, and I would say they're more
necessarily on that scale.
Yeah, they're more overt, especially back then, in a very like probably the first woman to enter that building as a colleague. Like it's again like what Casey said, suspending disbelief, but also like it's rooted in reality, which is kind of like really important to tell these perspectives, even if it is a fiction book, just to get your mind thinking about, oh, that's something I can think about in the future if I notice the signs of this.
Right. And I would say like there probably were women thinking this way at that time, like and not wanting to be involved in marriage and live that stereotypical white picket fence life. So like that part is real, you know, it's historical fiction sort of. So I don't know, I think some people just need that reminder that we've come a long way and women couldn't always just be like us, like 20 whatever, bopping around doing their career thing.
Yeah, no husband in sight, no kids on the way. I completely agree. So, you know, as we've kind of mentioned, Elizabeth has a lot of experiences of being treated very poorly in the office, you know, and that crossed the full spectrum of microaggressions and not getting credit for ideas to actual rape. What did you think about the way she's portrayed as part of these sort of male-dominated spaces?
Okay, first of all, the pencil in the hair and how it's on the cover and how it's just always with her. I loved, but I also hated because that's what she used to fend off her sexual assault person. But also she was just like, I'm ready. Like, I'll take it. I'll handle it. Mm-hmm. And I really liked it. Like, despite having the trauma, it wasn't going to stop her from being unapologetically who she was and chasing after what she wanted.
Yeah.
All right.
I think the only thing that I critiqued Elizabeth on, or I was thinking in my head, like, no, like, she was so, I don't want to say naive, because naive, not totally right, but like very set in her ways to where she couldn't adapt or utilize the situation to her advantage, almost manipulate her co-workers into getting what she needed and wanted. And then also just how like other people treated her, but she just was like, I'll just let it be. I'll just go through it. I'll do my work and I'll get credit for it. And it's like, no, you've got to play the game and recognize when the game needs to be played. So I think there was moments where I was like, Elizabeth, come on, play the game.
Yeah, flexible would not be the word to describe Elizabeth.
No.
No. I agree, Kaylin. I like the pencil. I like that she sort of uses it as almost like, maybe like good luck charm isn't the right word, but like this comfort of reminding herself she can defend herself. It's sad and heartbreaking, but I think one of the things that I like about Elizabeth as the book goes on is that you see that she's not bulletproof. Like, these things do matter, you know, trauma impacts everyone. There's no one who can not be harmed by living in this environment and having these sorts of things happen.
Right. You can be on top of the world and people are still going to be, you know, tearing you down because of who you are, because that's like what the last third of the book is, and it's sad.
Mm-hmm. And so I really liked how it just symbolized her fight almost. And yeah, I mean, like I said before, Elizabeth is frustrating. I mean, she's a frustrating person. She could have gotten farther actually if she had used her intelligence to be crafty, but you also respect her that she won't do that because it's just authentic. But yeah, so it's a hard book to read, and it's a frustrating book to read sometimes, not only because Elizabeth won't play the game, but also because it's frustrating to watch someone be torn down and unappreciated and take advantage of.
I will say, there is one point where she does play the game, and it's my favorite, when she pulls out the kitchen knives in the office of the TV exec and he has a heart attack, and she does CPR on him until the ambulance comes. It's like, she's such a badass. I loved her.
Yeah.
She's just like, yep, if he died, you know, it would have been an issue. So I just, you know, kept him.
Funny. I know. It was so funny. I was like, Elizabeth would. Like,
yeah.
Pull I was like, a knife that makes on sense. Him. Makes sense.
Pull a knife on him and then could do CPR.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on to some happier points in the book. One of the sort of main highlights, at least for a time being, until
I was gonna say happier. Until, I'm looking at the next question.
until death strikes. What did you think of Elizabeth and Cal? Are you okay? What did you? Yeah, okay. What did you think of Elizabeth and Calvin's relationship?
It was sweet. I mean, like, because we're getting both their perspectives. So, like, Calvin's just, like, this recluse who doesn't understand people very well. Like, you even hear it from, like, he's just very, like, also set in his ways, which is very true of Elizabeth as well. And, like, oh, she's stealing my beakers and stuff like that and wants things done a certain way. And then she comes in and is, like, a hurricane to his life and teaches him a new perspective. And it gives him a person to connect with on a deeper level. And that's what, like, lessons in chemistry, they have this true chemistry and almost soulmate like people. So I loved reading both of their perspectives of their love story and hearing from both as two very similar people, but also different and coming from very different backgrounds.
I will say I loved their relationship and how they were like soulmates without needing to put like a ring on it, and we're just unapologetically in love with each other and in love with what they do. Calvin could be a little frustrating in the fact that the one thing that really like brought him to life was his frigging rowing every morning and how he moved to this one random ass California town because one guy told him the weather was good for rowing and he just never left because of that. I'm like, that is such a bizarre characterization. It was quirky, you know, and you end up liking it and you see how it plays in. But I was like, What's this dude's obsession with rowing?
Yeah, it's so hard to understand. But yeah, I'll just echo everything you guys have already said. I loved their relationship. I love the idea of these two genius outcasts who are just perfect for each other. And it felt beautiful and real, and you loved it. It made his death so heartbreaking because you know that, like, especially for Elizabeth, he was like her rock in this world that was trying to break her, and it was so sad. But yeah, the rowing, I was like, I will never be rowing. This book has done, if it's done one thing, it's made me want to never row in my life. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. No, thank you.
But to play almost devil's advocate for this relationship, there's one point where I was super mad at Calvin, where it was like he was, I don't think meddling, but like he was trying to play the game for Elizabeth to keep her employed and treated well. And he's kind of protecting her at the job. What did you think of this, him protecting her from backlash from her position as like one of the only female scientists in this unit?
I didn't like support his action. I understood why Elizabeth didn't want him meddling because she was always so undermined, and him interfering was only going to make that worse. Because, you know, history will always, which is what Elizabeth says, history will always credit her accomplishments to him the more and more he's seen to be a part of her career. However, I also got it. I was like, yeah, Elizabeth is treated unfairly. If she worked for Calvin, she could get a lot more done because she'd be with someone who was actually empowering her work. Like, I understood both perspectives.
It was frustrating that him advocating for her put her in the position to still look like, you know, a weak woman. But I enjoyed that, like, she was going to get that funding either way because that rich, mysterious person was there. And it was just kind of like him shouting into the void for no reason. Also, like, I really liked it as a character point for Calvin because up till then he was like rowing and sitting in his lab doing nothing or like hanging out with Elizabeth. And so it was fine. It's good to see him finally, like, someone sparked like life into him to fight for what he loved when that he was just kind of like complacent for the most part until like it came to Elizabeth.
It comes from a place of love, and I totally understand that, but it was aggravating at times where I was just like, you need to tell her these things, because like I knew something was going to happen because we knew she was a single mother at the beginning of the book. So I was like, oh, what happens to Calvin? Does he leave her? Am I going to hate him by the end of this? But no, he dies. And then she loses her job because of it, because he was kind of her shield from the rest of the team. And I wish he would have told her, and I know she would have not appreciated it and would have not liked that, but
And you learn, this is kind of jumping ahead a little, like, you learn that Calvin loses everybody he loves to usually death, or they walk out of his life, and he's trying to, like, not give Elizabeth the reason to like have to change her life and potentially lose her. So I do appreciate that, like, he's thinking about, just in a sense it's self-preservation, but like he's valuing Elizabeth in his life, and I do like that plot point.
Yeah, I also agree. I mean, he was like a workaholic to the max.
Yeah, but then you find out he didn't actually do anything.
Yeah. Now that we're at this point, one of the plot points that I actually liked, even though it was so infuriating, was Elizabeth getting fired for being pregnant, because you know that is so realistic. You know, at this point in time, you got pregnant and you weren't married, you were getting fired. Like, this is just...
And the freaking HR lady is like, you slut, not like, let me help you out, girl.
Yeah, it was even the women of the office, because they were mad about her success and jealous of it. And you heard that from their point of view, that they were just attacking her and like didn't think she deserved it. And it was just so sad.
I know. I think it was a great demonstration of how patriarchy makes women feel like they're competitors. I mean, we still battle this mindset as women in 2023, of how you feel like you have to compete for success. You have to do all these things right for success. You're constantly balancing this line of respectability. And I'm sure Elizabeth was really infuriating because she did not give a shit about any of that stuff.
She did not play society's game.
When you think about it, like, yeah, the upper echelons of like a field like science or business or something, like the upper echelons are like, all the boys at the top are like, boys club. All the girls at the top are like, I'm going to cut a bitch to get forward in life, because that's what they've had to do the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Especially because there's so many cases where they're like, we'll have one woman. Like, we can allow one woman here, but like, they were not going to let more than one woman succeed. You know, that's too many women. Like, you know, it's, you had one shot to get to where you wanted to go.
Yeah, but you can't go further because you didn't get your PhD because you were kicked out because you were raped.
Right. Another side note, I love that the same thing happened to Frask. Like, obviously not love that it happened to them, but I thought that was such a funny and, like, it just, it was ironic because, like, drove the point home of, like, all these things in women's way. That
I did not like, okay, though, I liked that little bonding, okay? And how she was also pursuing like a PhD and couldn't because of that. But she was such a bitch and fired Elizabeth. And then at the end, she's like the savior. And I was like, no, this is too dramatic of like a character switch. You were not an emboldened woman. Like, I don't know. I'm glad she switched, but it pissed me off that it was just like, okay, now she's good.
I guess I liked it as a full circle moment, but also because it was just, she wasn't like totally supporting Elizabeth, but she was more saying fuck it to the man and fuck it to the job.
Right, but this girl holds a grudge. I was like, girl, you switched too fast for me.
Yeah, for me, I loved it. Another thing I love just about the way this book is written is that so many characters keep coming back. Like, they keep being in each other's orbit, and I felt like it was so cool and skillful to watch how everyone would continue influencing each other.
And you learned about every one of them. It's not like they were just there.
Like, right.
They all had a role and you learned about what made them tick.
Our next question is about tragedy. Actually, before we get here, my brain is a straight up disaster today. But Caitlin, you mentioned something earlier and I wanted to go back to it. I love Calvin's tick about being so afraid that Elizabeth is going to die. I felt like it was so quirky and unique and cute that he was like obsessed with protecting her, but like hiding it from her. That he just like was constantly afraid for her well-being and just being like, but I can never let her know that I think this.
He's totally like looming over her in the night, watching her breathe.
Yeah. Him and 630 are like,
must protect at all costs.
Yeah. But it also does then ultimately add this sort of extra layer of irony when he's the one who dies.
Well, did you guys expect it? Yes, first of all. I just want to kind of backtrack in what you were just saying before you get to that tragedy. Because Calvin is so protective, it's almost like 630 takes on his personality and his mission to protect the family and his death, which I thought was super cute. So it's almost like he's like still kind of around, but it's like the dog, you know, the dog sitting over his grave, like, help, but super sad. But I just love that 630 just kind of picked up that mantle and kept going.
Yeah. 630 was the one to take care of Elizabeth when she was pregnant and
named Mad.
He was just so funny. I loved his perspective on all of like humans, like stupid things we do, and he's like, I don't get it, but whatever, no one asks me.
Also on the 630 topic, the most heartbreaking thing ever is when he found the bomb and no one knew, and they were like, so what does the dog do here? And the what's his face producer guy was like, nothing. And it was like, in 630 shattered. I was like, no.
Yeah. Second only
don't
to Calvin.
Talk about 630 like that.
I forgot for a second that he was gonna die due to the bomb, and I was like,
me too.
No,
I
no,
did
no.
too. I was like, you had better not. You had better not. I was like, she can't lose Kelvin and 6:30. That's too much for one woman. Like,
also, like 6:30 was almost more of a parent to Mad than she was. Like, you needed 6:30.
Yeah. He was hustling. He was hustling to protect everybody.
I just love the vocabulary things where I've learned this many words. It's like, what?
Yeah. Or I know what a diary is, but I don't fully understand the concept. Like, yes, King.
Yes, I loved it. Okay, so now back to the sadder topic. 6:30 is there when Calvin dies. They've decided there's a leash law, and so Elizabeth gets a leash instead of Calvin just running with the dog because they're trying to, like, be abiding citizens. And she goes to work early, and he decides he's going to just run to work so that they can still drive home together because he loves her and wants to spend time with her. But then he gets, like, backed over by a car. That was sad, I think, because of how real, like, mundane and realistic the death was. Mm-hmm. Like, the leash gets caught, he slips, cracks his head open, and dies and gets run over. I think that made it sadder because he's, like, this phenomenal person who just, like, dies such an average death trying to just get to the woman he loves.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. It had this, like, just the writing, it was just so perfect. The way it was told was so simple that it really added to the sort of gravity of your sadness that he's gone. And he was such a pivotal character to Elizabeth that, you know, the fallout is going to be so great.
Well, and the back to 6:30, the perspective of the dog watching it happen and then being like, oh no, I have to go tell Elizabeth. That's what shattered me. It was like the dog witnessing the death. I was like, I don't know how to feel anymore.
I was going to say that's literally the reason why I loved 6:30 and love this book is just like, that is such a clever way of explaining someone's death, because just having someone fade into darkness or like, and that was the last thing I saw, is just, it's lazy writing at this point. This one is just a unique way of showing someone viewing the death, and it's from the perspective of a dog.
Right. Yes. You see Calvin's flame extinguish, and like, my heart still clenches up, like, thinking about the like how she described 6:30 witnessing it. Like, that stuck with me and was really good writing, and still hurts me.
It felt like you were the helpless one watching your loved one die. Like, that's how much you connected to the perspective.
Right. And you already knew he was like, oh no, like, my leash, blah, blah, blah. I was like, no, 6:30, it's not your fault.
I know. You want to console him so bad. You're like, 6:30, it wasn't you. It's just an accident. Oh. Which is great writing because you care so much.
Yeah. That was heartbreaking. Mm. Felt that deep down.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the point of, did I expect it? I knew something bad was going to happen. You could just tell things were going too well, but I didn't know exactly what the bad thing was going to be. Calvin was the most likely suspect, but I wouldn't say I guessed it.
I put it together because at the beginning, it's talking about her being a single mother. You get this like blimp.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, I knew he had to die eventually.
I didn't know if he was going to, like, die or leave, but then it was talking about how much they love each other. I was like, oh, no, he's definitely dying. Oh, no. I thought he'd, like, maybe drown or something, but.
Yeah, I think I knew it about halfway through the first half that he was going to die because, like, we all knew that she was a single mother, and I was like, there's no way this man leaves her. Like, no.
Which, even though it's horrible that he's dead, it's better that he's dead than that he left. That would have just smashed my heart.
I just didn't know at first if he was just like the stoic scientist dude that like dropped some sperm and left, you know? But then you get to know their love story and you're like, no, like, they're soulmates and he would have never left. Like, he's so concerned about protecting her that he like forgets to protect himself.
Right. And my first guess when I started reading the book was actually that Elizabeth just meant someone had sex with them and never told them about the child. So then when Calvin was introduced, I was like, oh, wait, how is this going to go down? Is he the guy? But yeah, very sad. Poor Calvin.
So speaking of Calvin's death in the aftermath, Elizabeth finds out she's pregnant. And She never planned to be a mother, but she's becoming a single mother while grieving the death of her soulmate. What did you guys think about her journey through motherhood and her relationship with Mad?
Without their neighbor, Mad would have died. And I loved that, like, kind of, I don't know, their cute little family unit with the neighbor who was, like, simultaneously escaping an abusive relationship in her own home while helping Elizabeth to still be herself while having a child. Mm-hmm. And she creates, like, a slightly social, more little Elizabeth, basically.
Yes, I loved the neighbor, but I agree. Without 630 and the neighbor, it seemed like Elizabeth was, you know, a very emotionally engaged mom, which was great to see from her, but she was just still in her own world, little scientist. She had to work. She was a single mom, so she couldn't be around all the time. And yeah, the space was really filled with some great characters.
Yeah.
I love just how encouraging of a mom she is. She's like, yeah, touch it, try it, do whatever. And of course, so Matt's, you know, unrealistically smart. Like, that's like too perfect of a plot line, but it's a great plot line because you get a lot of looking at Elizabeth from her daughter's point of view. Is, you know, you get the daughter's point of view, you get the dog's point of view, and you get a lot of Elizabeth from those moments because her daughter's noticing stuff about her mom and about what makes her her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just, it just reinforces that she's a scientist. It's everything's experimentation. Like, she builds this at-home lab while she's pregnant, and she's just so very driven by the, like, hypothesis model, experimentation model of, like, parenting even, and putting that into parenting. And I think that's an interesting perspective to motherhood, because I don't think most parents would say, like, oh yeah, touch the hot surface, you'll learn pretty quickly that that's not a good thing.
Right. I mean, it's like someone like Elizabeth needed those supporting characters so bad, because she was a great mom in the sense that she genuinely loved Mad and cared so much and, like, wanted the best for her. But like Caitlin said, Mad would have freaking died because Elizabeth did not have, like, the danger response that parents just must have.
Which provided so much of, like, the comedy in the book was, like, Mad's relationship with her mom and coming home from school being like, yeah, I told my teacher that people are animals and she yelled at me. Like, such funny. I don't know. There were some really actually funny things in there. But yeah, I agree. Like, without those supporting characters, like, I think my favorite part of the entire book is the found family trope. The people who end up in her life and how their little family unit is so ragtag and so out of place for the 1950s, but, like, it works. And I love it.
It takes a village to raise a child, and that's just the truth of it.
It right. does. And I love, Caitlin, you bringing up the found family trope, because I am a sucker for some believable but unlikely friendships. That is probably the those that that will get me every time. Like, I could not be not got by that. And so Elizabeth, who is just aloof, rigid person, and this Catholic housewife, and her, you know, single dad TV producer, and this dog,
priest.
Yeah, this priest who doesn't believe in God, but, like, wants to do good in the world. I was like, oh my god, this ragtag band of brothers is just in my heart. Like, I loved it so much.
I could just, like, picture sitting down to eat dinner with them in her lab kitchen, and just, like, what joy there must have been in that household. Like, that part, those parts of the books give me such warm fuzzies. I was like, I need to be a part of this family.
Well, speaking of the TV show host and producer, the single dad who she meets at school, kind of discovers her and models a cooking show off of her. It's a very interesting plot point, and I'm just gonna leave it at that. What'd y'all think?
All right, we've neglected to talk about, like, the main plot point in the book,
which is she becomes a TV show host. Okay, for me, This is the one point in the book that I would say stretched my disbelief maybe a little too far. Elizabeth was just a little too dry and scientific on camera for me to really believe that people would have wanted to watch that. I think something fun and like digestible like could have worked, but she was just, and she refused to take any direction. She did not read the quote cards. The poor heart attacks that she gave this poor producer. This was the one part. It's not that I didn't like it. It's that I was like, okay.
Right. And the housewives were quoting like, well, this compound and this compound makes this happen. And like,
yeah,
you probably, yes, it stretches your belief a little, but also it's just so fun of a concept, I think. Mm-hmm. Just like she's doing what she has to do to provide for her family. And she's like, my love is still chemistry and food is chemistry and it's important for your body's chemistry. So here's
right.
The empowering women chemistry cooking show.
Yeah, which just also to say, I loved the respect it put on like women's traditional roles. You know, I loved the way it talked about how complex cooking really is, how hard it really is, and sort of gave it that legitimacy. I was like, thank you.
You are keeping your family alive.
Mm-hmm.
By doing science in the kitchen.
Yeah, nutrition is life. It's so important.
Yes, and the quote, kid said the table, your mother needs a moment to herself. I was like, that's the best little tagline she came up with. That was so clever. I loved it.
Yeah, again, like just what Casey said of it just put respect on housewives' name and their roles. And I mean, I'm to be fair, probably I would not watch a show where it told me like the chemical contents of food, but that's really not my strong suit. I'm a microwavable meal person. but I think it just resonated with women across the country in this book because they were being lied to constantly. And everything was written from a male perspective. And they were like, do this for diet tips. This is what your family should eat. And it was all so male-centric. And now it's this woman telling you the truth and the right down to the chemical components of your food and what you need to survive and to feed your family and to live well. Like, that's just so refreshing. And I think that's what women saw in her.
Right. And this is like an era of media explosion. So people are eager to consume television because it's still a newer concept. So just like having the TV on and finding the show had to be really empowering for these women. Also, I just want to side note, another one of my favorite things that happened when she gave that cooking lesson on poisonous mushrooms after she found out Harriet was being abused. Oh my God, that was so funny.
It was. I also loved that. Again, okay, so back to Catherine's point, I loved that the housewives watching it were like, finally, someone's not treating me like an infant. Someone talks to me like I actually have a brain. Thank you. And that was the part of it that I did find believable, was the fact that women wanted to watch it just because finally people weren't belittling them and actually understood them. And I was like, that's right. Housework is work. Being a mom is damn hard work.
Full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
On that point, though, back to a little bit of the unbelievability. You're empowering all these women, but then you say you don't say grace before a meal, so one of them tries to blow you up.
That was a little crazy.
Okay, I could believe that, though, because
people are crazy. Out there, yeah.
You know, it's not about how many people you piss off. It's about how extreme they are.
Also, it's like the 1950s. People's first thought wasn't normally like terrorism, I feel like.
Yeah.
Fair point.
Okay. Well, bringing this all back around, what did you think about the ending? You end up learning sort of the final piece of this little bit of mystery about Calvin's background. And this, you know, these mystery people who drop in with the big bucks and like save the research. What did you guys think about all of that?
It's not a mystery. I figured it out like 2/3 into the book.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious, but you get the full explanation.
Yeah. And it's like a little too perfect of an ending, but I was surprisingly okay with it in this case because you're rooting so hard for her and she just gets like what she's been working hard for. It was like a warm, fuzzy little ending. Was it realistic? No, she's not just gonna like run this lab now with that stupid lady who fired her for being pregnant, but like all this money and now like a grandma for her daughter. Like that's far-fetching, but I was happy for them because of the found family and how hard she worked to like be authentically herself, kept like canceling her show because she's like, this isn't who I am. It never has been. It's just been a means to an end.
Yeah, I think it's right. So interesting, like, because it is very neatly wrapped up in a bow, and whether you like that kind of ending or not, but I just loved the comeuppance against her boss, mm-hmm. and how, like, him lying to investors to steal money, essentially. What he did was stealing money and lying to investors about projects. Like, mm-hmm. that's illegal, and also, no. So I
also,
finally-
while trying to, like, assault her basically.
Yeah, also while trying to assault her. It's like finally like he gets what's coming to him and that she gets his position. It's just like, okay, this is perfect. And like I wish this would happen in real life. Not like the other stuff, but like, you know, people
yeah,
that
warm,
are wrong.
Warm fuzzy endings for people who deserve them.
Yes.
Right. I felt the exact same. I was like, is this believable? No. Yes, it's a little too perfect. I don't care.
Yeah. I just loved it.
Elizabeth yeah. deserves it.
Yeah. Yeah. We needed the victory at the end.
I will say it's a bittersweet ending, though, because, like, Calvin's real mother didn't get the opportunity to ever meet him because, I mean, like, she was forced to give up Calvin, and that's just so sad.
Right, but
another
because
thing that's
of,
realistic.
Because of the parenting of 630, Mad has a lot of Calvin in her, so that's kind of a cute little, like, she gets to be a grandma to little Calvin.
Yeah. It is very bittersweet. Sad and happy. I loved it. Okay. I think that's all. Yeah. Do you guys have book suggestions? Anything else you've ever read like this?
Nothing like this. I mean, lessons in chemistry.
That's what I was going to say. I've been having a hard time not just saying
Love Hypothesis. Sorry.
Love Hypothesis. Yeah.
I also do not have something to recommend that we haven't already discussed. But I would say if you like this book, you should try Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo. It's another strong, you know, sort of historical fiction book with like a very strong female lead. Who makes very different choices and has a very different life. But
yes.
I think this
also
the
like
there.
Found family.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not fitting the norms of the time period. Yeah.
Feminism.
Right. I thought about that too a little. I feel like this could be a gateway for some people to maybe try some like science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like if you've never tried it, this might be like a good transition. Get the sciencey stuff, but.
And this is like historical fiction light a bit. So if you
yes.
if you're not normally a historical fiction reader, this could be a book to like get you interested in it a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I think there's a little something for everybody. So that's all we've got. Disclaimer, these are our opinions. We love discussing books. So if you disagree, we want to hear from you. Did you have different critiques, different takes, different things you liked? If you hated 630, don't DM us. But everyone else is welcome to have a conversation. We are at Busy Girls Pod on most social media. So look us up.
Let's wrap it up then. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Catherine. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.